154. On this occasion I was having a dream in which I was looking for my car, and irritated that I couldn't recall where I had parked. While I was searching for it, I was distracted by the incredibly diverse and beautiful town I was in, and on every street I turned into I found new and surprising architecture. I also noticed there were no cars at all, and suddenly I became aware that this was not a dream at all, but another location in a completely different dimension. Now I could relax and enjoy the experience. The first comparison with an Earth town that sprang to mind was the seaside resort of Port Mayon on the Welsh coast, but this was far more wealthy in imaginative architectural detail, and, oddly, more quaint. There was so much unusual design that it was impossible to focus on individual elements. Ironically, the word dreamlike came to mind with a sense of amusement, as indeed some of the architectural features appeared to be as if plucked from a dream. They had plenty of non-functional features such as exaggerated patterns, which appeared quite surreal. It is worthwhile remembering that on our physical planet, no matter how exotic the architecture or design, everything is geared towards functionality, as it is dependent on gravity and limitations of material. On this dimension, however, there were no such restraints, and the architecture made only a token reference to the laws of physics in order to accommodate our need for tradition and familiarity. The diversity, though, beggared belief, yet it all still managed to adhere to the sublime laws underscore of symmetry and aesthetics. There was an absence of conformity, yet a real sense of harmony. And then there were the people. It is easy to imagine how the absence of economical needs influences the dynamics of a culture, how the unlimited power of self-expression and the thrill of being able to socialize with like-minded yet extremely diverse sets of people can create a cultural strata, which could appear very alien to visitors from this world. Liberty and tolerance were another distinguishing feature of the population. Many people were unafraid to parade their sexual attractiveness in the most scantily dressed way possible. We have to remember that the populations of places like this are made up of people like us but who are liberated from the restrictions of economic strife and are free to explore their deepest desires, while at 155 the same time being naturally attracted to a large yet diverse number of kindred spirits. Many of us would regard such social reality as heaven itself. The town was crowded with people, many of whom wore exquisite costumes. My impression was that it was like a tourist resort, where people had taken a break from their work and were indulging in idle activities, with the sole purpose of enjoying themselves and giving pleasure to others. When I left the town and came to the beach, I noticed by the attitude of expectation that a show was about to start. A number of people were staring out to sea, and I knew that the show was going to be what can only be described as a weather show. Soon the sky over the sea darkened to deep blues and purples under rolling, menacing clouds. The excitement was electrifying. Suddenly the clouds burst asunder and bolts of lightning shot down into the mountainous ocean waves, which reared hundreds of feet into the air like giant tsunamis, stopping just short of crashing ashore. As the skies split open again, shafts of golden light hit the ocean crests and made them sparkle like giant diamonds. The show went on for some time, never stalling for lack of variety. I never knew who the artist was, but it was the most impressive display of unnatural weather phenomena I had ever seen. When the sky reverted back to its customary summer blue, I turned back towards the town. I was attracted to a street by a powerful rendition of Mozart's Figaro, and then I saw a procession of people dressed in the most exuberant festive costume imaginable. At the front of the procession were two women holding 8 feet tall standards encrusted with diamonds. One was of a stylized sperm and the other of a female egg represented as a sun. Two people on either side of the procession threw seeds along the pavements and halfway up the building, where they sprouted instantly into luscious green foliage. Following the two standard bearers were the musicians, and behind them, on a golden horse-drawn carriage, stood the magnificently attired soprano rendering this beautiful aria in a voice that pierced my heart. Finally, on another magnificent carriage drawn by half a dozen horses, followed a wedding couple, and stunning they looked too. Their abundant 156 happiness and joy at getting married was echoed by the cheerful crowd of wedding attendees who danced around the coach. After the procession had passed, I turned my attention back to the town. I thought about my car, and this triggered my waking into normal consciousness. The art student, 17th of June 2006. I underscore meditated for about an hour, but my thoughts were relentless and insistent upon my pursuit of them. This had a tiring effect, and feeling demotivated, I went back to bed. The moment I slipped into a dream, I woke up in it. I was strolling through a vast art school, and recognized instantly that I was in another dimension. The exhilaration never diminishes when I realize that I am alive and awake, not only in a completely different world but in another dimension. This was just like any art school on Earth, except that there were not that many students about. In fact, I was reminded a little bit of my old art school days in Hamburg, where I studied to become a painter back in the early 70s. Just as then, here too were abandoned half-finished objects of art, discarded by the students who must have realized that they had followed a dead end. We called them art-graveyards back then. I picked up instantly on the sense of hope still lingering in the pieces, which kept them just about alive. I recognized the inherent uncertainties of an artist, and it brought a smile to my face. These objects were extension of the students' egos, and the sole reason why they hadn't disintegrated into the general matter of this dimension was the fact that they bore the emotional signature of attachment, which I could feel just by looking at them, but it didn't stop them from being bad art. I approached a young student handling a large object suspended from the ceiling, which looked like an enormous mobile. She was quite engrossed in her work, but when I approached, she greeted me with a warm and friendly smile. I was intrigued by her work and asked her whether I could hold it. She nodded with a cheerful grin. 157. It was extremely light, about 2 feet in diameter and on a fairly long wire. It was constructed from a multitude of engraved metal panels with fine wire woven intricately throughout it. I didn't feel convinced by it. There was a cheap, almost mass-produced, quality to it. I tried to hide my feelings from the student. I was disappointed, but very concerned not to offend her with my thoughts at the same time. But she read my thoughts. "Oh, I didn't do this," she said. "I do very different things." I was quite relieved and asked her whether she would like to show me. She led me through the large hall of this enormous building to an upper level, which we reached via a huge and grandiose flight of stairs. Having been an art student at 4 different art schools in my youth, I was hugely fascinated and was dying to find out what went on behind the doors leading to the various studios. See, I managed to have a glimpse into some studios with their doors wide open as we walked past. Some were occupied by couples who worked in pairs, and some even had whole families working in them. Just from a quick glimpse, I noticed that their work was concerned with relationships. I was fascinated to find out more, but my new acquaintance ushered me along, keen to show me her work. We walked into a large new studio, clear of any clutter. In the center of the room, suspended in midair at about eye level, was an extraordinary object, about half a meter tall, 2 meters wide and at least 30 meters long. Several young women were working on it simultaneously. The object was perforated by large holes and the artists were working inside of them. It reminded me of a cloud, although the wood and the denim-like fabric interwoven with cotton wool-like material formed a strange, almost unnerving contrast. On closer inspection, I discovered that the cotton wool was a luminous gossamer fiber, very attractive, extremely light and intricately woven, showing marvelous attention to detail and artistic skill. I now realized why several students were working on the object simultaneously. This certainly was an object d'art, which had the rare distinction of being a completely new idea, even avant-garde. 158. It was fascinating to watch the women at work. I noticed other work along the studio walls. Not all of it was high quality, but most of it was enjoyable to look at. The work emitted an instant aura, which spoke directly to me. When visiting modern or avant-garde art shows back on Earth, I had always required a little time to rid myself of my thoughts and preconceived notions in order to appreciate the work fully, but here there was no mental labor. As I walked past the work, it spoke to me like a living entity. I now understood what was meant by the soul of a work of art. This is in fact a great feature of the next dimension. Everything has a soul, is animated from within and is easy to relate to. You get an instant wire to its innermost meaning. I then noticed that a person, unmistakably a tutor, had appeared next to me. He nodded towards a piece of work leaning against the wall in the corner of the studio. "Of course, some of it is crap," quote he said, plainly. I was a little surprised, and amused at the honesty. Then he grinned all over his face at me. I looked at the piece he was referring to. It was indeed bad. I felt it could have been a joke, or the work of some innocent soul trying to create something modern, but having no idea of how to go about it. In all of this I had lost my companion, but I found her as soon as I left the studio. She ushered me along a huge hall, which opened into a large auditorium. I realized that the abundance of space this building consumed was an indication that space was not at a premium. The young student had already reached the far side of the auditorium, where she waved, indicating for me to come over. With a bright smile on her face, she handed me a program and with her head she pointed towards an empty stage. "This is what I do." "What is it?" I didn't understand what she was referring to. "Read it." I quickly gathered that her work was a performance piece and what I was holding in my hand was the stage directions, but there were no people to perform it. She told me that I would have to read the script and project what I read onto the stage over there. The stage was not just a platform, it was a work of art in itself, constructed out of intricate latticework in I-159 black and ochre color combinations. It gave off a luminous glow, an energy field, which was loaded with expectation. I started reading, but the letters began to swim in front of my eyes. I picked out individual words, I was unable to grasp a complete sentence, let alone a script. I mustered all my attention to make some sense, but it left me mentally exhausted, and with that I woke up in my bed. After I woke, I ran through the whole event without changing my position or opening my eyes, to impress it on my physical brain. This is how I generally bring back my impressions from the other dimensions. I also vividly recalled another trip to an art college, an experience I had almost forgotten. I used the stillness of this state of mind to recollect it. It was about a group of artists whose ambition it was to create chaotic randomness which could exist only on our physical planet, where the various forces of nature, time and decay colluded to create a scene which one would generally describe as complete chaos. Here, the students expended considerable energy in emulating such earthly qualities, which brought home to me the fact that, on the next dimension, random chaos is a novelty noticeable by its absence. Everything there is the result of intent, whether deliberate or unconscious. The moment attention is withdrawn from it, created objects dissolve unless a subconscious habit keeps them alive. This doesn't mean that buildings and the like are of a fickle and transient nature. In fact, quite the opposite is the case. I recalled being told that some of the buildings were tens of thousands of years old by Earth standards and were kept in existence by the consensual awareness of the people living there. I also noticed that it was possible, despite all of this, to influence the architecture, perhaps by adding a gargoyle or changing the architectural detail, but that after I finished and withdrew my attention gradually, the architecture would revert back to its original consensual state. All this makes the next dimension a very solid affair, much more solid than here on planet Earth, where the wind, rain and other forces of nature erode even the sturdiest of structures gradually. If we wish to experience a crisper, more profound reality, which carries more prison, then we have to leave this world behind and venture into the next dimension, which makes life on this physical earth appear like a very dull dream. 160. I can well understand it when I read books by mediums reporting on the excitement of the deceased in the next world, although there are many things they do not touch upon. One of those things is the powerful reality found on the other dimension. There is nothing wispy or vaporous about it. It is like a constant communication with essence, an intense awareness. There is a more powerful connectedness to the reality surrounding us. It is as if, here on Earth, by carrying a dense physical body we keep ourselves apart from the reality of life. On the higher dimension, life is very close and very intimate. Yet it is by no means a bed of roses. The challenges facing us have more to do with our personalities and our underscore psychology and how well we are equipped to use this new enhanced reality and environment for our personal development. There seems to be plenty of opportunity for escapism, through sanctuaries, belief systems and personal heavens, and yet I have found that life on the lower dimension, which most closely resembles that of Earth, can be very drab. Our mental and spiritual limitations can make the world dot around us like a prison until we yearn and learn to break out and enter a higher dimension with expanded consciousness and enhanced creative opportunities. I was surprised at how often I encountered inhabitants who didn't realize that they were jiving in the land of the dead. Reality resembles that of Earth so closely that slight differences, such as forms of instant transport, are accepted quite naturally in the same way we might accept driving on the opposite side of the road. If somebody lost consciousness and died and then arrived on the other side, he or she would need some convincing that they were dead. There would be no change in the awareness of being alive. The environment would most likely look exactly the same, being a copy of the physical dimension. If they are not introduced by a friend, guide or relative, then they may wander about for a while, trying to piece everything together. Generally, the desire to gain clarity sends out waveforms, which attract helpers. It appears to be exceptionally rare that people get lost. I found that the heaven idea, or the Summerland as it is often referred to in occult literature, appears to be a bit overstated. It would be more accurate to say that the environment we move into after exiting from the physical dimension is a reflection of our state of mind. If we experience our life as repetitive, dull and uninteresting, then there is no reason why things should be different on the next level. If we are excited about life, inspired, 161 positive and cheerful, then the environment on the next dimension will reflect this. We are dealing with reality and truth. We can't take a paradisiacal afterlife for granted, and each individual will work for their own paradise, which is not an automatic process, but requires the same level of work as it does in this world, though you could argue that the absence of discomfort is a paradise in itself, like the absence of illness, aging, struggle, and working in an unsatisfactory environment. Yet I encountered many inhabitants on the next dimension who, despite their limitless opportunities to explore and create, showed signs of boredom. In the end, it boils down to employing the same methods for happiness as we do here on Earth, by seeking self-actualization and creative fulfillment, which alone will open the way into a creatively enriched environment of serene beauty, splendor and unlimited opportunity for growth. Death is not an automatic passport to heaven. The truth can be very harsh. It does not change with death. If anything, truth and naked reality become more prominent after we shed our bodies. This is why it is important for us to lead an authentic life, focused on psychological hygiene and away from selfish gratification. Unfortunately, depression and mental illness is a challenge which does not disappear after we have left our physical life. Many suicidal people will find themselves in a double quandary when they realize that they haven't killed themselves at all, but have simply shifted their problems onto another environment. Having said all that, people on the next dimension soon get the hang of making the most of the absence of their physical imitations and take full advantage of their newfound freedoms in the most positive and creative ways imaginable. The Art of Enjoyment 30th of June 2006. In my dream I was stranded on a high cliff overlooking the sea with a small group of other people. Mighty waves kept crashing in front of us, and with every wave the sea level rose. We retreated further and further up the hill until we reached the very top. Still the giant waves, 10 meters tall, kept rolling towards us. We seemed to be doomed. I decided the only thing left to do was to surrender to my inevitable end. A massive wave towered up in the distance, and I knew, 162, this would be the last thing I would see alive. As it rolled towards us, I allowed myself to be ripped away and tumbled into the black depths of the ocean. I sank deeper and deeper, and when I started gasping for air, I knew that I was filling my lungs with water. But it didn't feel as if I was swallowing water. I was breathing as freely as I breathed in air. This strange fact brought instant lucidity. With this realization came the usual excitement and exhilaration of a lucid dream. While tumbling through the dark void, I considered what it would be like if all mankind perished in some cataclysm. It wouldn't be that bad, I thought. There would be no pain at all and no end, only a new beginning. Soon I noticed that the blackness surrounding me was not water at all, and I was gliding through the air, drifting into a glorious dawn. Before I knew it, I had landed on the roof of a magnificent building, 4 stories high. It was designed in such a way that each floor formed a terrace. From the top terrace of the roof I could look down and see all the terraces below me. Each terrace was arranged in individual gardens and a seating area populated by a cheerful crowd of people, who in turn watched a jubilant and exuberant carnival procession going past. The atmosphere was instantly infectious. I felt high, which was increased by the realization that Jay was awake in another world. I was so wide awake that I began to ponder the possibility that I may actually be in this place physically. I discarded the thought when I succeeded in carrot floating 10 feet into the air. This was incredible. I had died and now I was alive again. No, not alive, but super alive, super awake, with a clarity of vision, hearing and consciousness that was breathtaking. The exoticism and strangeness of the proceedings around me assured me that this was not some earthly place, but a different dimension or planet altogether. I was excited. There was not the slightest concern that my excursion would be cut short by waking up in my bed. I felt I was here to stay as long as I pleased. There were no pulls from my body. There was no need for anything other than to explore and enjoy a new world. The procession on the street below me was in full swing. The only comparison I can come up with is the carnival in Rio. I have witnessed several of these exuberant celebrations, and it is obvious that the inhabitants of this realm have plenty to celebrate. What was fascinating, 163, was the incredible level of creativity used on the costumes. But it was not just the costumes. The people themselves had metamorphosed partly into exotic animals and fantasy creatures, which was hilarious and awe-inspiring at the same time. Whereas on the physical world, costume is all we can muster to express our individuality, imagination here had become physical reality, and despite the diversity, everything was in complete harmony. I was prompted to laugh out loud when observing parts of the display. Some were uninhibitedly erotic, with a whole group of attractive women and men, half morphed into fantasy leopards, blatantly displaying their desires whilst indulging in a sexual dance routine. Others had transformed into gods and goddesses, projecting sparks and bolts of lightning into the sky using just powerful gestures. Inevitably, every carnival has people on stilts, but these people had genuine long legs and arms, allowing for more exuberant expressions of their dance movements. There were dancing fantasy shapes, continuously changing, totally abstract and bearing little resemblance to the people who had transmuted into them. There were attractive alien creatures, white lights bursting from their insides through their metallic scales, illuminating the crowd around them. The people on the terraces below appeared to enjoy the display as much as I did. I thought it was time to cast my own worldly inhibitions aside and join the procession below. I hesitated to jump from the top floor to the street below for fear of experiencing the well-known sensation of uncontrollable falling, so instead I decided to jump onto the terrace below me. As this was no problem at all, I took one big jump onto the street, but not without indulging in some elaborate air acrobatics. Once I was among the party, it was a whole new sensation altogether. I had never experienced such uninhibited happiness on such a large scale in all of my life. It was impossible not to be swept along by the stream of happy emotions, of which there were no bounds. After drifting along with the crowd, I became conscious of the fact that I might at any moment have my excursion curtailed and would wake up in my physical bed. I felt I owed it to myself to treat the occasion with a sense of scientific curiosity. Carried by a powerful emotion, I swooped up into 164 the sky until the crowd below me was nothing more than a speck of color. Majestic like an eagle, I glided with the utmost confidence and ease over magnificent countryside. I passed lakes and hills, and then I found myself 200 meters above a great forest. What attracted my attention was the fact that the forest appeared to be luminous, and as I descended I discovered that all the vegetation glowed with a subtle iridescent light. It was not just the light that made my heart soar, but the sheer richness and abundance of the plant life. There was no way I could identify any particular species. Everything I looked at had an extra dimension to it, the most prominent of which was its luminous aura, the life pulsating in the light streaming up the stems and out through the leaves and petals. The brightness and frequency of the pulsing light differed from plant to plant, and so did the colors, which were of qualities I had never seen or even imagined before. There were so many hues, thousands more than on the physical earth. This was a different dimension altogether. I was aware that this was the real thing and that anything on the physical dimension was nothing more than a faint copy, where much of the exuberance was filtered out by the increasing density of physical matter. Earth may be beautiful, but this was on a far grander scale, which made all my memories of beauty from my home planet appear almost impoverished. I simply cannot do any of this justice with words. I feel almost pathetic in attempting to describe it. It's like trying to pick up a butterfly with a bulldozer. At the time, the only option I had was to stop and drink in the profound splendor and to fill every crevice of my brain until it could contain no more. Maybe just to bear witness was enough, and to say to the people back home, "Beware of all the beauty, I prepare yourself for the day you die so that your heart is big enough to mold a fraction of it." It was only when I attuned to the tranquil scene that I relaxed utterly, and became witness to the symphony of sound, which penetrated my being in the subtlest of ways, totally unobtrusively, working its way finally to harmonize every part of my soul. There was such peace in the harmonies that I guess I must have rested among the green for many hours. Only very reluctantly did I decide to move on. 165 I was saddened by the fact that there was no way to bring any of this back to the crude level I called my home. I did my best to impress my memory there, knowing the limitations only too well. After departing finally and soaring away from the forest, I was attracted to a tiny country cottage far below me. Before I had even covered any distance, I found myself sitting on a crude stone bench right in front of the house. I relished the simplicity of this place after having been exposed to such excessive splendor, but the garden in front of the house was still extremely pleasing to look at without demanding any attention. Conventional house design would normally serve some sort of function, most obviously a place to live in, but this house was more of an attempt at making a statement. It was like an externalized thought dash an idea which wanted to add an element of function to give itself a reason to exist. The house was a manifestation of a feeling. This was something I had come across before when visiting these realms. Part of the landscape or features provoked feelings that were simply not to be experienced in the physical world. There are feelings which cannot be experienced within a physical body, like a color we cannot perceive with our eyes. That's all I can do to explain it. This house was the essence of something new to me, and the remarkable design only added to the strangeness of the experience. While I sat on my stone bench pondering these sensations, I was approached by two creatures. The first one appeared to be a strange four-legged cockerel, but as it came closer towards me, curiously and inquiringly, it could just as easily have been a majestic eagle.